I pray that the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts may be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. And that our daughters may be as the polished corners of the temple. These words from Psalm 144 are the motto of a girls' school in London, called after its founder, Frances Holland. In fact, it was the founder's wife, Mrs. Sybilla Holland, who, towards the end of the 19th century, was perturbed to find that the new girls' schools that had started to be founded in London were under-nominational, and persuaded her clergyman husband that something must be done if the Church of England were not to lose all hold on what she saw as an immensely important development for girls. The purpose of the Holland School was to provide a good education in which religious teaching should hold a prominent place. In the end, Canon Holland founded two schools with this purpose. The first was in Baker Street, and the second was just off Sloane Square. It is to this second Frances Holland School that I want to refer, as it was there that I was a pupil for 13 years. When Queen Victoria was approaching her Diamond Jubilee, which I must hasten to add was considerably before my time, it was decided that the school would celebrate this milestone event by replacing the large windows in the main hall with stained glass of a design suitable to commemorate the occasion. After much discussion, a design was adopted which would promote six important Christian virtues, each represented by a woman from the Bible, the whole being intended to illustrate the school motto. As these windows were at the front of the hall, they were directly in our eyeline every morning in assembly. I'm not sure that we took a lot of notice of the subject matter at the time, but I well remember the headmistress, Miss Colville, describing them as a formidable array of worthy women. Having looked at them more carefully in the years since, and especially having recently received some information about them from the school archivist, I can appreciate the accuracy of Miss Colville's description. The designs for the panes of the first window were finalized first. They depict three women from the Old Testament, chosen to illustrate the virtues of justice, constancy, and humility. Deborah is portrayed in the first pane, the only woman to be appointed as one of the judges selected to preside over the Israelites before they had a king. She was evidently famed for the justice of her administration, a remarkable accolade for a woman at that time. Ruth was an unsurprising choice for constancy. Her refusal to leave her mother-in-law Naomi to go back to her birthplace alone following the death of her husband and sons, and the way she remained with her, taking care of her in difficult circumstances, is a natural example of faithful, selfless devotion. All the more so because Naomi was not a blood relation. The woman chosen to epitomize humility might at first sight seem somewhat surprising, since it is the Queen of Sheba who is depicted in the third pane of the first window. The queen who, having heard of the famed wisdom of King Solomon, came to Jerusalem to test him with hard questions, bringing with her a very great caravan with gold and precious stones. Nothing very humble about that, you might say. But when she found that Solomon was able to answer all her questions, that nothing was too hard for him to explain to her, we are told that she was overwhelmed. It is this that is emphasized in the window, where she is depicted with head bowed, humbled by Solomon's superior wisdom and willing to be taught by him. Three Old Testament women to emulate indeed. So far, so good. The original intention for the panes of the second window was to depict women from the New Testament, chosen to embody the Christian virtues of faith, hope, and charity, so famously promoted by St. Paul. However, for some unknown reason, plans were changed. Not only were three further Old Testament women illustrated, and rather obscure ones at that, but the virtues to be promoted were changed as well. The prophetess Huldah, who may be familiar to you, but I'm afraid I had to look her up, is there to illustrate truth. Jephthah's daughter, who was sacrificed by her father to fulfill a very rash vow, is illustrating patriotism. And the mother of the Maccabees embodies fortitude for the macabre reason that her seven sons were killed in front of her. The original plan seems so much more promising, and I wonder why it was changed. Since receiving the archivist's letter in which he asks for views about this, I have given it some consideration. My first rather naive thought was that the number of possible New Testament candidates might have been considered too small. The obvious women who spring to mind are, of course, Jesus's mother, Mary Magdalene, and perhaps Elizabeth. But when I Googled women in the New Testament, I was taken aback by the length of the list of women who appear, some of whom are named and some not. It's far too late to change the pictures in the windows, of course, but nevertheless, I'd like to suggest who could have been chosen to embody the original virtues of faith, hope, and charity. I have deliberately kept away from those I have just mentioned, but hope nevertheless that my suggestions are at least slightly less obscure than Huldah et al. For faith, I would nominate the woman who, having suffered hemorrhaging for 12 years and not having the confidence to ask Jesus directly for healing, believed that just by touching his cloak she would be made well. And she was. Jesus's words, "Your faith has made you well," would be the obvious verse to accompany her picture and inspire faith in its viewers. For hope, what about Anna? The elderly woman who had for decades been in the temple, devoting her life to worshiping God and hoping, like Simeon, to see the Lord's anointed before she passed away. Recognizing the Messiah in the infant Jesus, she proclaimed how he would fulfill the people's and our hope of redemption. And for charity, shall we have Dorcas, also known as Tabitha, the lady whom Peter raised from the dead? Although she only warrants a few verses in Acts, she is described as always doing good and helping the poor. The garments that her friends show to Peter demonstrate that rather than just buying clothing for the poor, she had gone to the trouble of making it herself. Do have a think about your own suggestions for New Testament women who embody these important Christian virtues, and I shall be interested to hear any that you would care to share with me afterwards. Before I finish, I would like to put in a word for Rhoda, partly because it was the name of the late Miss Colville, the headmistress I mentioned earlier, to whom I owe a huge debt of gratitude for suggesting to my mother that I should apply to Homerton, heralding the start of an enormously fulfilling 40-year teaching career that roughly coincided with the period since women students were accepted at St. John's, which we are celebrating this term. Rhoda was the servant who opened the door to Peter after he had been miraculously freed from prison. No one believed her when she said Peter was at the door and told her she must be out of her mind. But despite being only a servant and a woman, she boldly kept insisting that it was indeed Peter. Rhoda is an example of a virtue not considered for the windows, but nonetheless important: perseverance, without the exercise of which, by women and men over the generations, we would not be celebrating the place that women now hold in the life of this college, and indeed in all walks of life. So, justice, constancy, humility, faith, hope, charity, perseverance. As St. Paul wrote to the Philippians, and as the Francis Holland windows encourage, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Amen.